When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Please be advised that Gen X, This Is Why, contains adult language.
Gen X pro tip, guys. If you go home to your drug stash and it's gone, just run. Hi, and welcome to Gen X, This Is Why, the podcast where we re-examine the sometimes bizarre, often scarring media from our shared childhood. My name is Amy. Proud Gen Xer, born in 1977.
And I'm her sister Jenny, born in 1974.
What up, Jen?
What up, loser?
Jenny, I have some trivia for you today. So we are recording this. If you listened last week, we're recording this on the same day. It's December 23rd. So again, apologies for my voice being scratchy. Hopefully next episode I'll be fine. Today is the anniversary of Graham's death. She's been gone 7 years today. So in memory of her, I have a Graham vocabulary quiz for you.
Oh, God. Okay.
Music. As you guys may have picked up, Graham had her own language for everything.
Yes, she did.
So I have three terms that I want to see if Jenny can come up with, okay? Jenny, what did Graham call a joint?
A marijuana cigarette.
She did. She was so appalled that her five-minute stepson, he was her stepson for 5 minutes.
Who was like in his 20s.
Smoking a marijuana cigarette around
that
her.
That kid was such a stoner. In Graham's house.
Question number two. What did Graham call the vanity in her bathroom?
I have no idea.
Come on, you know what she called it.
A vanatorium?
Yes! A vanatorium.
Yes. I was like, let me just make up a word that she would say.
She called it a vanatorium. No clue why. I think we looked this up at one point. Or is that when we were looking up sanatorium versus
sanatorium?
Sanitarium. Okay. So Graham called her vanity in her bathroom her vanatorium. Okay. Jenny, your final question. What did Graham call the drawers where you put your vegetables in the fridge?
They're crispers, right?
They are, but what did she call them?
God, I don't know. Something that sounds like crispers, but isn't crispers.
You don't know?
No.
Think.
No, I'm thinking. I don't know.
Crispilator.
Oh, God. Right, she did. The crispilators, right?
Yep, she called it a crispilator. Oh, so that was Graham's language, guys. Oh, I don't know what was happening. Jenny, what did she call a green pepper?
A mango, which I have no idea what that's about, but I think she's not the only one in that area that did that.
I think it's a Pennsylvania Dutch thing. I think we've looked this up. Like, it refers to things that were pickled.
But
they're not pickled. I know.
Okay. All right.
I know.
Come at us if you call green bell peppers mangoes.
I bet you we'll have some Scranton people who do.
Well, and then I'm like, is it just the green ones? But like when we were growing up, you didn't have the other color ones. They just weren't around.
No.
Like you didn't have yellow ones and orange ones.
Just green. I'll think of some more. But
although you had red ones, I think.
I'll think of some more. But Graham had a real unique language. Yeah. And I wanted to honor her today. RIP, 7 years. Okay. Now, Jenny, we are finishing today.
Wait. I have a question for you. The time period is 2 years. Infestation of ants and bees in your house or two teenage kids?
Oh, two teenage kids. Oh, wow. Two teenage kids, 100%. Four teenage kids.
Wow.
Because my phobia would start acting up, and I would get
your
into
phobia
like,
would start acting up. Wait. How does this phobia act up?
Like I get,
is it like arthritis?
No, I get compulsive behaviors.
No, what are the compulsive behaviors?
I would start like pulling out my eyebrows and scratching my skin.
I shouldn't be laughing at that.
No, I can't. You have to ask your friend Steve because he also. Oh, no. But
nope.
When you have that kind of stuff, the thought of being surrounded by the beehive, mm-mm.
So you would rather raise four teenage kids for 2 years?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll raise everybody's teenage kids if it meant I never had to see a beehive again.
Wow, you heard it here. Send your teenagers to Amy's house.
Please don't. All right, Jenny, today we are looking at season 9. I don't know. Maybe it's episode 17.
Episode 16-ish, 17-ish.
For us, we're going to say it's episode 16, part 2. It's the conclusion of Home Again. Jenny, do you have a description?
It's the same fucking description. Why would it be different?
It is a week's passing between these episodes.
Charles is forced to address Albert's recent criminal behavior. The two of them take a trip back to Walnut Grove, and Charles is hopeful that the experience will straighten out his son.
Okay, I said it last time. I'm sticking to it. I'm so thrilled to see Charles back. Don't get me wrong, but I need him to dye his hair again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not okay with it. Or get it cut. Do you know how hot he would have looked like if he had like a real tight kind of haircut?
Like a grown-up man's haircut?
Yeah. But it was the 80s, so, you know, yeah. We didn't know better. All right, Jenny, we get a super long recap.
Yep.
And then we open on Doc Baker treating some grumpy old man named Zeb. And Zeb is calling Doc Baker a hack. And I'm here for it.
I love this guy's energy.
He says, what do doctors know? They need that weird shit around their neck to know if my heart is beating. He's talking about stethoscope.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't see that I'm alive? My heart is beating? And I'm thinking, this guy has a good point, actually.
This is the guy that's like, weathermen don't know anything. You just look outside to see. Like,
yeah.
Like, if this guy were alive today and he saw me, like, checking my app this morning while I'm standing next to the door outside to see what the weather is, he would lose his mind.
If this guy were alive today, he would definitely be calling Talkback 16. And only local people know what I'm talking about.
Yes, he totally would be.
So Zeb has been hurting really, really, really bad at night. He even cries. And he's pissed off that his wife is telling Doc Baker this. He's like, you fart in your sleep and I don't say anything. Like, it's real weird.
Yeah.
Doc's like, come here, wife. Here's some morphine.
Here's 10 packets of morphine. Go nuts.
Yeah, give it to this dude when the pain is really bad, okay? And sometimes if it's really, really bad, you could give him 2 packs. On the way home, Jen, Doc Baker runs into the Carters and Faux Pas tells him Jason's Jr. needs some glasses. Baker offers him a ride into town to check his eyes. And I just wrote, basically, this kid is scamming.
I have an index card.
I have a question though. At one point, Doc Baker goes, come on, Hippocrates.
That's what the index card's on.
For his horse, right? And I thought he said, something like, come on, sex trafficker. Like, I thought I got it totally
wrong.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway.
What is the significance of Doc's horse's name? So, it's Hippocrates.
Father of medicine.
It's considered the father of modern medicine. He's Athenian, so Greek. He described in a scientific manner many diseases and their treatments after detailed observations in more than his 70 books. He lived 2,400 years ago.
Say that again?
He lived 2,400 years ago.
Wow.
He was ancient Greece.
Yeah. He's older than Dad.
Dad doesn't listen. Nice try.
He lived to be 100. I can't make jokes about Dad if he's not here.
He lived to be 104. I thought this was interesting. He taught and wrote under the shade of a big plane tree. Its descendants, now believed to be 500 years old, is the oldest tree in Europe. Plantus Orientis.
Not only is that amazing, but it's amazing that somebody lived to be 104 years old 2,400 years ago.
Yeah, that's nuts. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It had a diameter. It has a diameter of 15 meters. He saved the Athenians from a plague. He described epilepsy for the first time as a hereditary disease, along with several other diseases. Like, there was, it's amazing how advanced the Greeks were. Just saying that, like, this is a time when, like, Northern Europeans were, like, in caves, right? Like, these guys had a modern society. And they knew about a lot of diseases, but they still thought they came from, like, weird things. Like, curses and, you know, like, fire and, like, you know, like, the sun shining on you. Like, they didn't, they had, it took a long time to understand how you caught diseases and how they worked. And, right, and right, he was right. one of the people that really started to figure that out. He described a lot of diseases as hereditary. So like that you would inherit them from your parents. Now, did they know about genetics? Likely not, obviously. But like they understood how you could, they understood the concept of genetics if they didn't know what it quite was yet.
Right. Got you.
Today, physicians take the Hippocratic Oath. That's still a thing. One of his
which
quotes,
which is basically like, do no harm.
Well, one of his famous quotes is, which is part of the Hippocratic Oath, is, as to diseases, make a habit of two things, to help or at least do no harm. Mm-hmm. Doc Baker should listen to that.
Doc Baker should listen to that, and Doc Baker should get the hell away from me in that image.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's the one thing I thought was interesting, though, is like, do no harm is part of that whole thing. And like, that was a big thing in like pagan, like pagan societies, like
you would know
that, like that was their whole thing, is like, do no harm. And like, that's interesting that came from like ancient Greece. And well, I mean, from where we're standing in the Christian world, like the part of the world that's Christian, the Greeks were pagans,
right?
I mean, right. That's, you know, the Greeks and Romans were pagans, so
That's interesting. Anything else?
No, I just want to say what a dolt that kid is.
How dare you? Jason's Jr.?
Jason's Jr. is like the, like, he is just the, like, embodiment.
He is the embodiment of the younger sibling.
Of the younger sibling energy. Like, I'm just here that, for like, it. Like, it's like, I feel like I could just see him when he's behind closed doors by himself, he just, like, shuts down like a robot. And then, like, when there's people around, he's just like, oh, my God, people. Oh, my God, I'm here. Pay attention to me. And then he just, like, shuts down.
And I feel like Albert is the embodiment of the older sibling who's just, when they want to be nice, might throw you a bone. But they have to be on something to even interact with you.
But Jeb is so – that or Jason's so funny. Oh, my God.
This kid is scamming. I love
this kid reminds me of, like, we should fix him up with Claire Danes' younger sister in My So-Called Life.
There you go. They would rule the world.
They would be the most annoying couple and produce the most annoying children on earth.
Yeah, maybe. So Doc is on to this, and he gives them clear glasses. And Jen, this kid looks just like Cousin Oliver. You know who Cousin Oliver is from the Brady Bunch. He looks a young John Denver. He's little John Denver. Oh, yeah,
totally. Yep, 100%. Mm-hmm.
Just then, Faux Pas runs in and says, Zeb... You know, the troll from earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in real bad shape, Doc. You got to get out there. Like, he's hopped up on sugar now.
Because he's taken, well, and he has diabetes, so that's not good. Mm-hmm. But he has no morphine.
Right, he's just eating sugar.
Yeah.
So wife is like, I gave him, Doc, I have to admit this to you. I gave him 2 packs of morphine.
Now, Jenny, and Doc is like, he should be like at La La Land. He should be in pain.
I have a question for you, though. Doc's like, that's a shitload of morphine. Now, would your Doc's first instinct is the medicine must be tampered with.
Or medicine is not working for some reason.
Right. And I feel like my first instinct would be, this dude, there's something really wrong with this guy.
No. Because, I mean, anybody who takes that much morphine is going to feel no pain at all. Like, there's no way. You know what I mean? Like, he would be so hot. Like, if she was like, I gave him one, he might think that. But I feel like because she gave him 2 packets, like, Doc is like, he should be high as a motherfucking kite. Like, there's no way he should be feeling any pain.
Now, Doc does the the classic coke move.
But I think
takes a little bit of the morphine and rubs it on his gums.
But I think he's doing like the scientific method, like eliminate that the, you know what I mean? Like you have to take in scientific, you have to eliminate certain factors. So like, let's verify that the morphine is actually morphine. Okay, we can remove that factor. Then, because like dealing with like something's wrong with him is much more murky. Like, get rid of the factors that are easy.
You're giving him way too much credit.
Yeah. All right.
He's taking his sweet old time. Is it the scientific method that he takes some of that morphine?
No, how is he going to tell if it's morphine or not?
I don't know.
But right, he's exactly. Like, it's not like you have a microscope.
Linger, and he's like rubbing his gum.
No, he's not. He clearly could. I mean, that had to be one taste. He could tell it was powdered sugar. There's no question.
Yeah. So he knows this is sugar, and he's like, and he's dun, dun, dun. So the next morning, bright and early, Doc is banging on Olsen's door.
The thing that I think is I should mention here, though, if you heard my index card in the first half about opium coming to America, the opium addiction. Like, don't forget, this would be after the Civil War. This would be like 25 years after the Civil War. So they do know about the addictive properties of opium at this point in time.
Yeah, because they knew that Graham had a problem.
Yes, right. So at this time, they know that morphine's addictive. So you would only give it to patients like Zeb is clearly like mortally ill. Like he's, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Terminally ill. So you would give it to terminally ill patients because you're not as worried about the addiction situation. Yeah. So they know so Doc knows about the, you know, this problem at this mm-hmm. time. So I think he's like a little more on the watch for it.
Doc is sus.
Like the society, you know, like these people want to grow up, don't really know this, but he seems to know it.
Doc is like, this is sus. So he heads over to Nell's and he's like, there's a problem. The morphine is sugar. The sugar is morphine. The morphine is sugar. So Nell's is like, well, could the manufacturer made a mistake? And Doc's like, no way. I completely trust the manufacturer.
That's the thing I don't understand. It's like, you can't rule that out.
No.
And especially like if you take the Albert factor out of it or like, you know, like they know all these people, like, I wouldn't say it happened. I think that would be the last thing he would think would happen is that it happened at Olson's. Yes. He might think like in transport it happened or at the, you know,
It would have been better if he had said, I just got off the phone with the factory. They've had no other reports of this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Because like to assume that it must be all these people I know super well that did this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that seemed odd to me.
So Doc is like, no, dude, it happened here. And Nell says, well, nobody touched it but me. Oh, and Albert. And Doc is like, oh, fuck. Dun, oh, dun, dun. Da, da. Now, we know Albert's in town because he's in trouble.
Right. Didn't he go through some other kind of...
What?
Didn't he go through some other kind of addiction or something? Around Albert? The time he burned down the...
No, he was just smoking.
Well, he's like, he's done all these kinds of things before.
But I have a real problem with, we know where the morphine addiction began, when he had to give him morphine for his broken leg because Edwards got drunk and ran him over.
But that's not what they say in this. They say the kids got him started in it.
Yeah. Edwards just stands there like, oh, it's not my fault. Yep. No clue. All right. So Doc asks Charles, he heads over to the mill to narc Albert out immediately. Yeah. And he asks Charles, can I talk to you for a minute? I want to know about Albert's behavior. Is it erratic? Is he up? Is he down? Does he sleep a lot? And Charles is like, he's a teenager. Of course he does.
Right. But I feel like deep down, Charles knows it's true.
Of course he does. He's an empath. He's picked this up.
Oh, God. Okay.
So Doc confides in Charles that he thinks Albert has. Now, if you watch true crime shows, Albert has two things. Motive. But number two. Opportunity.
Yep. He clearly had opportunity.
So Charles is like, come on, dude, there's no way. And Doc is like, if you are so sure, let's go check his things right now.
Dun, dun, dun.
Jenny, how would you feel if Mom and Dr. Kondash were digging through your underwear drawers at home?
Oh, God. So weird. That would be so fucking disturbing.
Dr. Kondash is standing there with this big red mustache. Donna, dig through her shoes.
That'd he didn't awesome. Have red hair. Oh.
Yes, he did.
The other Kondash.
No, Dennis.
No, he didn't have red hair.
It was like reddish brown.
Okay. I went to the other one, though.
So they're searching the room, and Charles is looking through the drawer. Nothing. Baker's like, it's in the closet. Charles looks through the closet. Nothing. He does find like sour balls in a pocket or something.
See? He likes sour balls.
Mm-hmm. And Baker's like, check the shoes.
Baker's been down this road before, I feel like.
And Charles finds the morphine. Doc has to taste it real good and long just to make sure it is the morphine. It is. Okay. So at Doc's, Baker is showing Charles what withdrawal is like. He's walking him through this whole thing.
He's reading a whole book on it. So this is obviously clearly known at this time.
He's going to have tremors. He's going to have vomiting. Yeah, it's going to be a real good time.
It's going to be real bad. Yeah.
Charles says, oh, it's after school. Better head over there. Now, Gen X pro tip, guys. If you go home to your drug stash and it's gone, just run.
You're
just
fucked.
Run.
Well, Charles didn't really give him the opportunity to run, though.
No, he didn't. He's fucked. So Albert's turning his whole closet inside out, realizes the stash is gone, turns around. There's Charles.
Like right behind the door. It was so creepy.
Charles grabs him and shakes him. How long? How much? Albert's like, it's just been a few months, just a few times. And he's right. Then Albert does the brilliant flipping of the script. What do you care? You were going to abandon me anyway.
He's not wrong.
Charles is like, what are you talking about? And Albert goes, you were going to leave me here. Admit it. And Charles is like, yeah, okay, you got me. But I did it because I love you. And I want you to get away from those Moranis brothers or whatever their names are. Yeah.
The Morgan brothers.
Riff Morgan, is it?
I don't know.
Gen X pro tip, don't hang out with somebody named Riff.
Gen X pro tip, don't hang out with Morgans.
She's going to kill you. Charles says, look, now that we know what's wrong, we got this. Just promise me you're not going to do it again. And Albert's like, yeah, we're not going to do it again. Gen X pro tip, don't believe an addict.
He's lying and Charles is buying this hook, line, and sinker. And he's like, good, I'm so glad. This is over. I'm glad we got it out in the open. Everything's good. Charles is such a sucker.
Yep. Albert, Jen, spills like the Hoover Dam. But the Hoover Dam doesn't spill, so that's not really a good metaphor.
I was just there. It's actually quite impressive.
Oh, I want to go see it so bad.
It's very cool, but like Lake Mead, the water is so low. It's drying up. Yeah, it's crazy.
So Riff Morgan did it, told me it was cool. They made me do it, blah, blah, blah. Charles is like, swear to God. He's like, yeah, I swear to God. So they hug, and Charles is like, I'm not leaving you, dude. Okay. At Fauxpas shop, Doc Baker and Fauxpas are talking about the power of the placebo.
Yep.
And Jason's Jr. thinks he looks smart in these glasses, and Doc says, maybe now he'll get smarter.
This dweeb.
Wow.
He's such a dweeb.
He's so cute, though. Oh, I like God. Him. Baker then sees Charles, and Charles tells him, good news. Albert hasn't been using too long, like two or three times. We're good.
We're good. And Doc's like,
Doc's like, he goes, I feel good about this. And I wrote, oh, this is destined to crash and burn.
Yeah,
I
mean, come on, man. Yeah.
Doc says,
it's never going to be that easy. Morphine addiction is not that easy.
Especially since we know he's been stealing.
Yes. If you're at the point where you're lying and stealing, like, you're addicted.
So Doc says, just in case, take my card. If he starts acting erratic or has extreme irritability, please let me know. And Charles is like, yeah, I got this.
We're good. Mm-hmm.
So now in class, Jason's Jr. solves a math problem. And now it's Albert's turn. He can't do it, Jen. Can't even think straight.
Because he's going through morphine withdrawals in the fourth grade. Because this is fourth grade math.
Yeah. Big asshole, fake John Jr., Mary, Narc, Ned, what's his name?
Jeb.
Says, maybe you need glasses, loser.
Like this and dweeb Albert, over here.
Albert pummels him. Oh, like, he's beating the fuck out of this dude.
I mean.
Then, I had to rewind this three times. Then he turns around and slaps Mrs. Plum.
I know.
Oh my God. I was dying. I screamed.
I bet.
I mean, we needed this all through season 9. Where was this kind of stuff?
Yeah, we needed this.
So he realizes what he looks stunned. The whole class is stunned.
Yeah, the whole class is stunned.
He just.
The whole class is stunned / traumatized.
Gen X pro tip. You slap someone you're not supposed to, just run into the woods. And that's what Albert does. So Etta Plum immediately runs over to tell Charles. Did you notice how she was like, Charles, Charles? Like, she wanted him to scoop her up.
Oh, God.
And whirl her around a little bit.
Yeah, all right. Whatever.
She's like, Albert hit me and he went nuts. Charles just, all he has to do is look at Ride or Die.
He just turns and looks at him. And they're on the horses. And they're on horses. Were you happy?
Yes. Oh, yes. So they head over to Doc's. And Doc's like, I don't think you should go looking for him. I think he's going to come here.
He'll be back. Yeah.
Because I got the morphine, bitches. Jenny, what's to stop him from going to another town?
Well, and that's what he should have done. And they were looking for him. And Edwards is like, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. What? Why? It's a person in a very limited amount of woods. Like,
you know, all those morphine addicts out in the woods. Sure enough, they lay a trap for him. And Albert shows up and boom, they got him.
He's slinking around. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Albert can't be this dumb. But then you forget, like, he's heavily addicted to this stuff. So he's not thinking straight.
So they're heading out to Edward's shack. And I just wrote, where's Edward's going to stay?
I don't know.
We don't know. Like, is he sleeping on the couch at
Laura's? I'm just like, oh, is Edward's opening a rehab now?
So Charles and Edwards are in the, I'm calling it the withdrawal shanty.
Okay.
And it's a nice quiet night. I'm sorry, Charles and Albert are in the withdrawal shanty.
Yes.
It's a nice quiet night, Jen, both on the screen and in my home. When suddenly Albert starts screaming and I jumped like 10 feet.
I totally remember this though.
He's screaming and he's yelling, I'm hurt. I'm hurt. Please give me some morphine. Yes, Jenny.
Why doesn't Pa just punch him out, knock him out? I mean, this is what the guy does. Like, he loves to punch a motherfucker out. So, like, why doesn't he just punch Albert out?
That's true.
Just put him out of his misery.
That's true. He could.
Just knock him out for, like, 25 minutes.
Charles is yelling, I can't do it. I can't do it, son. And then Albert's like, I can't breathe. I need some air. Charles takes him outside. Albert pushes him aside and starts running through the forest. Now,
I can't believe Pa fell for that.
Is that the only comment you have on this scene? You're not going to comment on the zany circus music?
Here's what I have. If Pa had a dollar for every time he had to tackle someone in the woods.
I know.
And Jenny, also, like, he carries, like, he picks Albert up and carries, like, how do they do this?
That was hot.
But, like, Albert's got to weigh, you know, I mean, 150 pounds.
It's Pa.
Okay, whatever. It's Michael Landon, first of all.
Jenny. When a father has been pushed by his son physically and is now chasing him through the woods to save his life, is the appropriate music?
Yes.
No.
Yes, it is.
You get out that Casio keyboard and give me that low C, low D.
They're minors, the minor chords.
Jesus Christ. So, yes, Charles carries him back to the house because he's like, I'm not letting you throw your life away. Like, it's not happening.
Yep.
And he's like, you're the one who put this, because Albert's going, why are you doing this to me? And Charles is like, you did this to you. Charles, my heart was broken for him in this moment because he's giving Albert some tough love and that's hard to do.
Yep.
So Laura stops by now. It's like the next day. And she's like, where is he? And Charles is like, he's sleeping. And Charles is basically like, I'm in a fucking nightmare here.
And Laura's like, I'm going to take over the shit. And he's like, no.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Laura goes, I got, hey, everybody's permission.
Ugh. Yeah. Where's that fucker? He's not here helping. Laura doesn't need this shit, though. She doesn't need to deal with this. This is not her problem.
No. But I love how she's like, I'll help. I'll deal with it. And then Albert wakes up screaming and his whole body's shaking. And Charles goes to Laura, get out of here. And she doesn't even argue.
She's
like, okay, I'm out. So Laura pieces out. Albert starts vomiting. He's covered in milk.
I'm no doctor. But whose vomit is pure white? Like, I feel like there's bile. Like, if there's nothing in your stomach, there's at least bile that's like... Please tell me if you've vomited pure white. I don't believe that this. I think it's just milk they put in his mouth.
Well, and Charles is yelling, get it out of you. Get it out of you. And he's just puking out the milk. It's gross.
I'd be pissed if I were Edwards.
Now we get a Albert is through the worst of it montage.
Right.
And that entails Baker swinging by the mill to report to Ride or Die that Albert is through the worst of it. but it's going to get real bad now. And he has family support, and that's like a big step, okay? Now at the withdrawal shanty, Albert can finally eat, and he's out of bed. And he admits to Charles that he's scared because he knows that if Morphine were right here and he were alone, he would do it.
He says something like, I think if there were Morphine here and I were alone, I'd take it. I'm like, he sounds like Jennifer Coolidge in White Lotus.
Oh, yeah, he kind of does.
All right. Like, does. That's like how she talks. Did you see the Saturday Night Live skit?
No.
Oh, it's so good. You got to watch it.
I'm going to have to watch it. Guys, if you didn't hear, that just reminds me, I want to say this on the public feed. If you didn't hear my recommendation, I highly recommend Bad Sisters on Apple TV. It's very good. And White Lotus, of course, which Jenny
White Lotus, loved. Season 2 is amazing.
It was amazing. Amazing. It was really, really good. Mm-hmm. So Paul says, I know you would, buddy, but you're not alone. You have me. And then he says, and you have yourself. I think that's what alone means.
That's the whole point of what he just said.
The definition of being alone. Okay. He says, it'll take time, but you can do it. And Albert's like, but what about when you abandon me?
This is like going to be me when I'm alone with the Christmas cookies.
Yeah, true. Yeah. And Charles says, shut the fuck up. I'm not abandoning you. Like, you're coming home with me, moron.
Of course.
So the next day they're getting ready to leave, waiting for the stagecoach. Albert asks if he could go to school for a minute. Now, I wouldn't let him out of my sight.
Nope.
Especially since walking to school means he has to go right past Baker's.
I feel like Baker put that shit in a safe.
But they say, yeah, go ahead. And Albert walks in and he apologizes to Mrs. Plum. And he also gives the class a mini PSA about the dangers of drugs and peer pressure.
This was right around the whole just say no stuff, right?
Yes. I'll talk a little bit more about that in my why.
First of all, Jason did something that I wrote, oh my God, Jason. I don't know what, but he did something.
Who?
Jason's who? Junior.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh my God, he's such different energy than Carl's Junior.
We see Jason's Junior move in on some chick.
That's what he was doing. Oh my God. He's like winking at her and shit. Uh-huh, like, what the hell? Uh-huh. That was super weird. You
tell me Carl's Jr. wouldn't do that.
Yeah, he would. But then Jason gets the old four eyes thing. Yeah, and then his glasses.
He ditches those glasses, though. He's done with them.
You have to find this and put this in the Mimi Bees. They're scanning across, like when Albert's giving the speech about don't do drugs, they're scanning the classroom. And there's a chick in the classroom that has a full-on 80s mullet haircut. Like, they didn't even pretend like that it was old-timey. Like, it's a full-on 80s mullet.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, Jenny, as Paul and Albert drive away, a Laura voiceover tells us, a few years later, Albert returned to Walnut Grove, and we were happy to welcome Dr. Albert Ingalls home again.
Well, I had to rewind it a couple of times because I'm like, how many years? I thought they said a couple of years later. I was like, what the fuck? But no, it was years later. She just said years later.
But there's been a lot of issue with this because supposedly in a movie or something, we learn Albert has died.
Oh. Well, maybe he became a doctor, then died.
We don't know his fate. We don't know what happened to him. But
he wasn't real. You know that, right?
I know that, yeah. All right, Jenny, whose fault is this?
This is Doc Baker's? No, it's not his fault. He actually helped the situation. I feel like it's Edward's fault because of the original addiction.
Yeah, the culprit is standing right there. And not at one point does he say, oh shit, I feel really bad because I ran him over drunk and the boy got on morphine. I don't know. It's whatever. I love ride or die, don't get me wrong, but come on.
I feel like Edward's addiction caused a lot of, it was like a spiraling, rippling effect through Walnut Grove. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jenny, at the end of every episode, we look back on a theme or a lesson, something we learned from the rewatch or the original. We talk about how it affected us as children, maybe how we thought about it as adults. It's called our why. It's designed to finish the sentence, Gen X, this is why. What is your why for this episode?
This is why I don't really have a why.
Oh my God. Okay.
Well, I mean, I kind of do, but like, it's more like an observation. Like, this is why every, I think, it's not because of this, but I feel like this is a result of the Just Say No stuff. Like, this is why the anti-drug message was baked into everything we saw. Like, movies, after-school specials. How many Just Say No after-school specials were there? When did that campaign start?
It had to be in 81 when she got into the White House. But here's my issue with this. I not only have teenagers, but I have worked with teenagers for the last 15 years.
Oh, 1984 was the first when it first emerged. The phrase.
I think we have swung, like most things, the pendulum back too far the other way now. Yeah. Like, I think in response to Just Say No, we've kind of really laxed our views on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we're seeing an opioid crisis in a lot of areas.
No, I mean, we're seeing
education is not there.
Well, we're seeing an opioid crisis because everybody was fucking duped by the Sackler family.
Right, but we're also not, I don't think we're having the same kind of, I think there needs to be a little fear out there.
Sure, I think like healthy fear is normal. And I think that's gone.
I don't know.
That's gone?
I think it's gone. Like, so I was thinking about this and I was talking to Timmy last night. When we were growing up, there were a lot of movies that presented alcoholism or drug use with terrifying consequences, specifically around like drying out or withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I was thinking about, and this was not in our childhood, this movie came out a little bit later, but was Riding in Cars with Boys. Remember when he's drying out in the bedroom and she's trying to, like, you know, raise her kids and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, we saw it in TV shows too all the time. Like, this idea that if you did get hooked on drugs, it was not easy to get off.
Yeah. And I think the right balance is because the problem I have with the way this was handled when we were kids a lot of times is like everything was just fear-based in the 80s.
Yes.
Like everything was driven from a fear-based thing. Yes. And it's like that sometimes works and sometimes backfires. You know what I mean? Like it's not necessarily – and I think when everything comes from a place of fear, it's hard. I think it should come from a place of reality. So like depicted in a real way, like leaving Las Vegas or something. I mean, maybe that wasn't like – that was a little overdramatic. But like – just depict it as like reality and like let people make their own decisions instead of like giving it this slant of like always like just, I don't know. The fear mongering annoys me like that. I don't like that.
And I
feel
I
like a lot of people like rebel against that fear mongering type situation.
I agree. And I think that was the pendulum way too far this way.
Yeah.
But like instead of going whoosh, where we don't really talk about it much at all.
I disagree. I feel like it's still, you still see
movies and
stuff.
I asked my kids if they knew what an opioid was and if they knew about the opioid crisis. And they don't talk about that in school.
Really?
I'm like, really?
Well, I don't know if like that's a place that like, they're not going to teach that in school, I feel like.
They should in health class.
But that's the other problem is that I feel like, who was I talking to the other day? And, about this, you know, this new AI bot that like, people, teachers are afraid that like it's gonna be the homework. People, it's gonna be the homework and shit. It's going to.
You mean the one that could write essays?
Yeah, but the whole thing is like everybody's panicking. Like I got into this big AI discussion the other day. Everybody's panicking about what AI is gonna be able to do, and like, oh, like kids aren't, the homework's not gonna be a thing anymore, and like, oh, it can write an essay on Macbeth and life. And it's like maybe we need to stop teaching Macbeth specifically. Like,
do not go no, for like, Macbeth.
No, like maybe we need to. Like, why is the curriculum still the same as when I was a kid? Like, rethink teaching.
It's not.
Like, rethink teaching. Like, maybe homework isn't a thing. You know what I mean? Like, maybe pop quizzes in class are more of the way you've, like, but we still approach school in the same way. Like, you go to school.
No, we don't.
Class.
No, we don't. When have you been in a classroom?
I mean, I worked for an education company up until a couple of years ago.
Well, I was in a classroom up until 6 months ago.
Yeah, but you were in
college.
They
don't teach the same way.
You were in college.
My kids
like,
don't learn the same way.
Well, they don't learn the same way, but like they're reading the same books that
they're really not. The canon has hasn't completely been shattered, but the canon is much more diverse. I just had this conversation
with
my boss.
Well, thank God. I mean, it could only get...
If, If you had an English degree in the 90s, you worshipped at the altar of dead white guys.
No, we just had to cut this conversation.
And when we were talking, when we were covering My So-Called Life, it is definitely more diverse now.
But like, I mean, 100%. But like the content, what the content has is one thing. But like maybe the way we teach needs to be completely flipped on its head.
But you can't say like maybe the concept maybe of school. You can't needs say to be like maybe we don't talk about Michelangelo anymore.
No, it's not like that.
You need
it's just
to
a,
have the classics.
Sure, but like if you're trying like, but like, can you think of a different way to teach Shakespeare than making everybody read Macbeth? You probably could.
I mean, I will tell you that. You know, we use different modes now. Like when I taught Macbeth, I would have a comic book, like a graphic novel of Macbeth. Or
how many essays are in the world about Macbeth? Because it's been taught for so long.
A ton.
So like maybe just like think of, I don't, and like maybe homework's not a thing. Maybe that isn't the right thing.
Research shows. I shouldn't say this so blatantly because I can't back this up.
When you're saying research shows, like that's
research starting to indicate that homework is useless.
Yeah. Yep.
I've been saying that for a long time.
But instead of worrying about the AI bot being able to do the kids' homework, maybe rethink homework. Do you know what I mean? Like
so you're talking about different forms of assessment. And I feel like we have really gotten there. We do many different types of assessment now. But kids need to know how to write.
Sure. Of course.
Like that's going to be a problem.
But, you know, like the other thing is like, you know, like, oh, kids are never going to be able to know how to do like research. And it's like, but they do research in a different way than we did. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to hold all these thoughts in your head anymore. The world has changed in that way.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to know all this stuff. So don't fill your head with all these things that you could look up in a second.
But the problem with that is we really need to focus more on information literacy because people do not 100%. Know.
100%. That is a much better way. That is a much better way to spend learning time. It's like, okay, it's you have this whole giant resource and you have these bots and you have all this stuff. How do I make sense of what's correct or what is like believable and what's not? That would be a great use of teaching time.
Yeah.
Because, like, you have all this information all over the place.
Don't you ever besmirch Shakespeare again.
Oh, listen to you with these words. This is why. Oh, my God. Did I tell you the funniest thing that I found? If you're still looking for last-minute Christmas presents for me.
I'm not, but go ahead.
If you're still looking for last-minute Christmas presents for me. Hold on. I got to find it. I stumbled across this the other day. And the way I stumbled across it. Is I was looking for the definition of this word, chrysalism. Do you know what that means?
Chrysalism.
Chrysalism.
Well, chrysalis is a cocoon of some kind or shedding of a skin. Is it related to that?
Sort of, kind of.
Okay, go ahead.
The feeling of tranquility when you're indoors and it's raining heavily outside.
Hmm.
Right?
So cocooning, yeah.
So long story, I stumbled upon this where I found it. And where I found it was in the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, this is a book? It came out last year in 2021.
All right. Back to our point, though. Oh my God. Point is...
I diverge.
They need to talk to kids about... the dangers of drugs with some fear involved.
Sure.
But some also fear that's with based a lot in reality. Of fact. Right. Yes. Also with a lot of fact. That's my soapbox.
Have you seen Euphoria?
Not yet. It's on my list. I really want to see it. So Jenny, I have, this is why you need to support parents who are going through this with their kids. And there are a lot of them. Like when I think about friends I know who, you know, their kids are addicts. Like, this is terrifying to me. Support them any way you can. Bring them dinner. Send them flowers. Let them know you're here. Let them know you see them. Because this has to be one of the hardest things on the planet. That a parent
let them come to your house and cry.
Yes. Yes. I'm dead serious. Like, I'm going through very small issues with my kids. And it's hard. I can't even imagine. Like, did you ever see that movie with Julia Roberts? I think it's called Ben. And she basically has to, like, disown her son because he's yes. such an addict. And I just can't imagine, like, a worse heartbreak for a parent. So, you know, they deserve our love and our support and our help. So if you know somebody's going through it, support them. Buy them the Book of Obscure Sorrows.
Oh, my God. I love the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows. Maybe they'll
take their mind off of shit for a while. All right, Jay, do you have any idea the themes and the lessons that a young, impressionable mind could find in Macbeth?
All right. I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's so many things on Earth. Like, just, like, think about it differently, maybe.
Yeah, okay. All right. Why don't you tell everyone what's coming up next? Do we know? Because everything's a mess.
Are we doing A Child with No Name?
Oh, yes, we are.
I just see Manly's face on the preview, so I'm assuming we are. So we are doing season 9, episode 17, A Child with No Name. With the birth of a beautiful baby boy in the spring, it appears that Laura and Almanzo's family is now complete. I have a feeling this ends.
That's sadly. It?
That's it.
No, I have a better description. Hold on.
I'm just reading it from the source of the Little House on the Prairie site.
Laura and Almanzo welcome their second child, a baby boy. They are undecided as far as names go, and Doc Baker examines the child to make sure he's in the best of health. But one fateful morning, the Wilders awaken to find their new baby dead. Right away, a dumbfounded Laura places blame squarely on Doc Baker, whose business starts to wane, and he considers leaving Walnut Grove. Rose suddenly comes down with smallpox, the good doctor is their only help.
Oh boy.
Their only hope. So Jen,
that's a much better description.
It's like a dishing on Doc Baker. We're doing it.
I mean, we've done this before. I feel like he's done, like, how many times has he almost quit because he killed like 3 people?
So guys, after that, then we're gonna do May I Have This Dance, which is where Willie gets married. So he goes from school to get married.
Well, I mean, he's 47, so.
And then the last episode, I decided we're not going to do the one with Edwards and the orangutan. I just can't.
What?
I just can't do it, Jenny.
What?
And then
we've come all this way. You're not going to do the orangutan episode? People are going to fucking riot.
It's going to be dumb.
People are going to riot.
And then we're doing the last one, which is Hello and Goodbye, where everybody leaves.
Then we have to do the orangutan episode.
Guys, okay, I'm going to
put I'm going to quit right here, right now, if we're not doing For the Love of Blanche.
Okay, we'll do For the Love of Blanche. Jesus Christ.
Is that the next one? Go ahead, put your poll in. You know how this always ends.
With me winning?
Yeah, okay. That's how we ended up doing War Games.
I don't know if... Oh my God, I just came across the reviews for A Child with No Name, and somebody named theirs, Almanzo Got His Groove Back, 10 stars.
No.
No. No. How dare you?
All right, so we're doing, let's review. Season 9, episode 17 is next. Then we're doing season 9, episode 19, For the Love of Blanche. Then we're doing Hello and Goodbye.
No, we have to do May I Have This Dance, because that's Willie's last episode.
Oh, okay. Willie gets married, I guess, or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hello and Goodbye is the season finale?
Yeah.
Oh my God, then we're done?
Yes, and then we move into viewer's choice spots.
Okay.
And 3 movies.
Oh my God, wait.
It's a lot. All
right, so 2 more months of this after, like, 3 more months, probably.
Yeah, we are scheduled to end... This will end the end of March.
The recording or the airing?
The airing.
Okay.
So, you know, now Jenny's added an extra week on with her love of Blanche.
Aim, there will literally be people picketing outside your house.
You think?
To come all this way. We've been talking about this stupid orangutan episode for like years.
I'll send my daughters to go live with them if they come here. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for bearing with us with our missed episodes and my sick voice. even though it's January when you hear this, we hope you all had a really good holiday and Happy New Year. And if you haven't already, check out our Patreon. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes. And right now we're doing My So-Called Life and Rock of Love. I don't know what we'll do after. We'll see. Maybe some blockbusters or something. We'll figure it out. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.